This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 140 of Within the Trenches. I am currently recording live from the 2017 Navigator Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I am sitting in the Expo Hall. I am at booth 407, at least that's what the guide said, but I think I'm sitting in aisle 5. So I'm not exactly sure if that's right. There's a couple people who were looking for me earlier and said, we couldn't find you. And then we saw you with your headset on. And well, and then I was found. So, but I definitely, you know, I want to thank the IAED in all these episodes. I've been thanking them, you know, all about this and stuff, for giving me the opportunity to come out here and do the podcast. It's been a lot of fun. And this episode, along with all the other episodes during this week of the conference, are supported by the IAED and, of course, by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. So I'm going to jump right into it. I've got my guests here today, and one of them was reluctant to come on and talk. Yes, I just called you out. But it's going to be a lot of fun, as she's going to throw something at me.
Yep.
But my my guests today are Ty Wooten, who's the director of education with Nina, and Lisa Fulton, who's one of their instructors. A new instructor, actually, that has just come on. So thank you very much both for being on.
Thanks, for Ricardo, for having us.
Thank you.
So we're going to jump into our time machine, and we're going to go back
In the Wayback Machine.
That's right, the Wayback Machine, yes. You know, there's probably a lot of people, though, that don't know what that is. It's, well, Mr. Peabody. I know all that. I know about all that.
They should, you know,
get cultured.
Google that.
Right.
And watch some Mr. Peabody.
I know, because that's good stuff.
It's good shit.
Did you like the animated, the new one that came out?
Every day. Uh-huh. Well, oh, no, the new one? I haven't done the new one.
What?
No.
How dare you?
He's old school.
I'm old school.
Well, you know, they actually did a really good job with
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, it was good stuff, man. I highly recommend it.
I will now check it out, because I've been very hesitant. Because, you know, it's high expectations.
That's true. You know, it's just like a lot of the movies that, you know, are coming out, that are all these remakes and stuff.
Right.
I'm wondering if it's going to live up to it.
I wouldn't go see the old John Wayne movie that they redid recently. What the heck's the name of it?
I'm not sure which one that one is.
It had Matt Damon and...
I don't know. Are you talking about the Bourne movies? No. Now he's got IMDb it. Well, you know, a lot of those remakes, though, a lot of the movie companies say that the reason that they do them is because they're generational movies.
Right.
So, like, Dirty Dancing and Footloose, which Footloose pissed me off.
I didn't watch it.
Oh, don't.
Okay.
I'm sorry, anyone who's listening, if you dug the movie.
The original was good enough. They didn't need to redo it.
Right. Yeah. Because, I mean, it was cool seeing Kevin Bacon on that tractor going head on with the other guy.
I mean, chicken.
And I think the new one, they're maybe using buses or something, or I don't know. It was different. I mean, it was all right, but you can't beat Kevin Bacon. The bacon.
No. You can't beat bacon. Everything's better with bacon.
Exactly. Oh man. So while he's looking that up,
sure. Let's go in our Wayback Machine.
Yeah. Exactly. So before you ended up, switching with Nina to be an instructor, you were in dispatch.
I was.
So what title did you hold? Were you not just a dispatcher, but were you dispatch and then dispatch supervisor?
I went through all the ranks. I started as a call taker, learned both sides of dispatch, police and fire, EMS, became a trainer.
I thought he was laughing at you.
Yeah,
first.
I do. What's funny about that? I became a trainer, a frontline supervisor, a frontline manager, and then I switched over to the admin side, and I ran our HR and training departments, and right before I left, I was running the QA and accreditation departments. So I touched a little bit of every area.
Damn, so when you say you went through the ranks, you
I
actually...
Did.
actually went through every single position that was offered by your...
I wasn't a director. I didn't make it to director, but... Gotcha. But yes, I did everything else.
Dang. So what made you want to get into dispatching to begin with then?
Honestly, it was, I was 19 and I needed medical insurance, and my father was with the police department and a government job, good benefits, you know, and I thought it would be a temporary gig, and I quickly fell into a passion for it and never left.
See, that's really cool then. So you had like the actual influence of your father then in public safety. Did you ever do any ride-alongs with him or anything?
No, he wasn't an officer. He was the IT manager for the police department.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I got pulled over several times, and I never once dropped his name because I was afraid I'd find the one officer that did not like him.
Right.
I was not that person. But no, I going to work to visit him all the time. I grew up in the police community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you decide to apply at 19, and what was that like for you? What was the interview process?
I originally started in the booking room, and they were desperate for help, and they needed, you know, they were pretty much hiring anybody. I worked there for a year, and I quickly realized that that was not the job for me. And so I wanted to transfer to, I was already a police department employee, and I wanted to transfer to communications. And I interviewed with the director, and I don't remember a whole lot about the interview other than he just asked why I wanted to transfer and looking over, you know, my work experience, which was almost non-existent because I was 19.
Right.
But yeah, they were hurting. It, like all PSAPs across the country, they were hurting for help, and they had a willing and able body that showed up for work, you know.
Yeah,
they,
exactly.
They gave me a chance. So.
So then from there, you know, you get the job, and then you start training. What was the training like? Because now, years later, now you're an instructor. So.
Sure. Actually, where I was in a big metropolitan city, so it was very good for the time. We're talking the early 90s. We actually had classroom training. We had, at the time, I think it was only 2 or 3 weeks of classroom training. But still, we had 2 or 3 weeks of classroom training. And then they put us into on-the-job training with a trainer. So they were advanced for that time. They've come a lot further since then. We have a full-on academy now that's 7 weeks and the 3 months rotation of on-the-job.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty intense. It takes a year to learn how to do that job. Back then, you had to do it in 6 months.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
See, that's way more, you know, advanced than when I had first started. I started in 2001 at a small PD in Florida, and the training that I had going in that first night was me sitting down with my trainer, and he takes a 911 call, and he's done, and he goes, "All right, Ricardo, you're next." And I looked at him. And I was like, "Wow!" I was like, "Are you serious?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm serious." And I thought, "Okay, man." Luckily, that next call wasn't anything crazy. it was something kind of stupid. But also, with it being a smaller police department, you know, we had what we called county radio, or just the county dispatch, you know, the sheriff's department. And if we had a medical that came in, we would take the initial call and just ask, you know, the main things, and then transfer them to county. And then we would send out the first responders. So we really didn't stay on that long with any of the medicals. But when I moved from Florida back home to Michigan and then started working for Allegan County Central Dispatch, it was completely different. I mean, I got through the training within about 4.5 months, I believe it was, because I already had, you know, experience. But after I took my, you know, I got my EMD certification, and the call volume there was so much, the medicals that were coming in, I thought, holy shit, what did I get myself into? Right. I was like, this is completely different from working at a smaller police department.
Sure.
So then how big was your agency then? And what state were you out of?
Tennessee.
Okay.
And
you can go ahead and say the agency.
It was Nashville. The city was Nashville.
Nice.
At the time, when I started, police and fire communications were separate. We were co-located in the same building, but police department had civilian police dispatchers, and the fire department had mostly injured fire department personnel that were running their communications. I couldn't honestly tell you how big we were back then. It's been a while, and you know, old girl has memory issues. When I left here early 2017, we were at 195 positions, and we have since consolidated. So police, fire, EMS is all one. We're one consolidated PSAP.
Wow.
And we're away from the police department and fire department.
Jeez,
that's 195 people. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. That is the most we had at my last PSAP was like 20.
Well, we had 20 vacancies, so we weren't always at 195.
Holy crap. Yeah. So then how many people would be on at once?
Depending on the time of day and the day of the week and everything, we average about 20 to 30 on duty at any given time. We had 12 radios that have to be manned 24/7.
Wow.
So, and then the rest were call taking and relieving for breaks and whatnot.
Jeez. So then, okay, because I can't wrap this around in my head. How did you communicate with each other?
Okay, so unfortunately, we have, state-of-the-art CAD messaging and stuff, and the good old-fashioned stand up and yell across the room at each other.
Oh, of course, yes.
Pick up the phone kind of thing. But unfortunately, we outgrew our building like 15 years ago, and the more police precincts that were added and the more fire halls that were added, we had to add extra consoles for dispatch. So the main room, the big room that we were in, got overtaken by mostly dispatch, and it pushed all our call takers upstairs to the second floor. We're on two different floors, call takers on one, dispatchers on the other, which is not ideal.
Right.
It's not a good thing. So we have to rely on good good call taking techniques to get all the pertinent information in the call and get it to the dispatcher, because we are separate. Everybody's cross trained, but when you're working, you're either doing call taking or dispatching. We don't do the simul at one time.
You know what's funny is that in my head, you talking about being on separate floors, all I can see is, like, if the CAD system went down at my old PSAP, we had these little slips of paper that
cards.
We would have to write everything.
Yep.
And in that setting, I can see, like, in the post office, putting,
the tubes,
the container, putting in a message, and foom, goes up.
We joke about that.
Another call that came through.
We actually joke about having a system like that. In 2010, we had some pretty devastating floods hit Nashville.
Uh-huh.
You may not have heard about it because the oil rigs in the Gulf decided to explode at the same week. So the national media was all over them.
Right.
Meanwhile, Nashville was under three stories of water. And our comm center, of course, is overrun. Nashville was in crisis, and it was all hands on deck kind of thing. And we have a completely redundant backup site that would have been wonderful. And we can activate both the backup site and the primary site at the same time. So we can have double bodies everywhere.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Unfortunately, we were remodeling our backup site. We were putting new floors in, which meant all the consoles were ripped out. Everything was ripped out. So it was completely useless to us, unfortunately. So we had everybody at the comm center. Our director, who came from the police department, he had never taken a call before. And he had great respect for us, but he had never taken a 911 call before. Could not sit down and help us. So he was running the floors. And we have one dilapidated, extremely bad elevator that was really slow. So he was literally running the stairs up and down to take messages from the call takers to the dispatchers.
Crap.
Yeah. He was, we were worried about him. We were looking at car corner.
He needed like a pigeon or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
To send all those messages back and forth. Oh, man. Yeah. No, I guess I didn't know about, that stuff that had happened in Tennessee. That's kind of like when Farrah Fawcett died. Michael Jackson died the same day, and nobody paid attention to Farrah.
Poor Farrah.
Yeah, I know. That's messed up.
Yeah.
So, do you remember, like, your first call or some of your early calls?
I don't remember my first call, to be honest with you, no.
They're still locked away.
Yeah, yeah. They have not
in
been
the box.
Unlocked yet.
I started out on day shift, and day shift was more administrative. Where do I pay my speeding ticket, and how do I get to court, and all that. So it was probably something like that. But no, I don't remember any first traumatic call.
Now, you did talk about a call just a little bit ago before we started recording this.
I didn't personally take that call, but we use it in our orientation to tell the new hires what you're exposed to.
Right, yes.
I took some crazy calls in my career. People call 911 to ask me if it was strawberry season, because they want to know if it was safe to buy strawberries at the local grocery store. Why didn't the sun come up this morning? During the time change, we had a lot of elderly people that are concerned about the sun not coming up at the proper time, which is really sad. Of course, every Thanksgiving, I don't know how you confuse an 800 number with a 911 number, but we get questions on how to properly cook the butterball turkey.
What?
Yes, Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when I was dispatching, back in the 1800s.
back in the Disney.
They called him the town crier back then. He had a bell.
Sorry, nice.
Yeah. Sorry.
I can kind of see that.
Yeah, well, you've seen my gray hair. I remember that there was a one year, we had to look up the Butterball line because we got so many calls. We were finally just like, somebody just look it up.
Yeah.
Like, go. I think we actually sent a police officer to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, when we didn't have internet.
Right.
1800s, you know, it was before electricity, actually.
Me and Ben Franklin were flying that kite.
So
I think we sent somebody to the police officer to the grocery store and, like, get the number off the Butterball. Like, go look at the package and get the freaking number. And then call it into dispatch so that we can have it to give to people.
Right.
Because after the fourth call that day, like, I don't know if it's safe to, you know, the old West Wing episode, right? I don't know if it's safe to cook your dressing inside the bird or not, or am I going to kill the people that are coming to dinner?
Oh, my gosh. And people would call for that.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever got a phone call like that. That's pretty crazy, man.
You had some great public educators in Allegan County, I guess.
Yes, yeah, we did, I guess. But that's nuts. So being instructors and stuff and education and such, what do you think it is that makes people call 911 for stuff like that? Because they see it on TV, they figure they can call for anything or what?
Yeah, well, I think it really comes down to the fact that 911 is by far... It's in the top 10 brands in the world, right? There, you know, we had a number of staff were at the ENA conference last week in Budapest. Mm-hmm. And, I know, they have to have special converters in Europe because even though their number is 112 or, you know, 111 in UK or whatever.
Yeah.
They have to have special converters to convert 911 because everyone still watches American television, watches American movies. Even there, like people dial 911 and that's not even their number because it's such a prolific number. It,
right.
You know, there were years
112 ago. 112 or 999.
Yeah. You know, years ago and early 2000s, Nina had, I believe it was Nina, had done some sort of study about the like, what is the brand of 911? And at that time, I've been told that the only brand that was more recognizable was Coke.
Yeah,
like
it's everywhere.
Coke and then 911. And then after that, everybody else was after that. So... Now, you know, obviously we're sitting here, you've got your three Apple phones, an Apple computer. We all have Apple phones too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, obviously the dynamic of branding has changed over the years, and especially in the last 5 or 10 years.
Uh-huh.
But I would still put 911 as a top 10 brand all around the world.
Right.
And so I think that's part of why, you know, we get the number. We get those crazy calls. We get the calls where they just don't know where else to turn. So they call the number that they know, which is 911. And unfortunately, that's...
that's why all that stuff comes
that's
in.
That's what happens.
Well, I mean, and I used to take calls where people would call and say, you know, I need you to send out the animal police. Excuse me?
Animal police.
The animal police. You're talking like animal control, right? Well... I guess, you know, like that one TV show, you know, the animal, is it Animal Police or it's Animal Something? And yeah.
Animal 911, I think it is.
Something like that, yeah. And they would be asking for certain things. And I would say, I apologize, but it's not like what you think it is on TV.
Right.
It's completely different.
Right. My favorite was when I was a telecommunicator, people calling in, you know, Indiana and in the middle of the winter, what are the roads like? I honestly have no freaking clue. At the time, I was working in a sheriff's department. We had no outside window, right?
Right.
We had a window to the lobby. I couldn't even see a road. Like, I got no clue.
And what
it's
about
like, look outside?
When is my electricity coming back on?
Oh,
yeah.
That was a great one. That was my one time I got called in on the carpet.
Uh-oh. Oh. What did you say?
Lady, I don't know. Why don't you call the freaking electric company? And the sheriff called me in. He's like, you know, there's a certain thing about customer service. You might want to think about that.
Right.
It's interesting how your dynamic changes as you grow older and you get into different positions. You know, I would have probably said, if I was a manager at the time,
yeah,
I would have probably suspended me for saying that, right? But at the time, you do what you do.
Right, right, exactly. And you learned from it because, I mean, you're the director of education now.
Right. Well, and I've been the director of two agencies, too. So, if one of my telecommunicators and I'd heard that from one of them, I would have put them on suspension.
Sure. Well, what made you want to switch? I mean, you started, you know, in the you know, standard rank of, you know, being an awesome
communications officer
or an awesome dispatcher, whichever. Yeah. And then, you know, you stuck with it. I mean, obviously there was a passion for it because you kept moving up. And then where you're at now, part of an organization that's really, you know, setting forth, you know, protocols and, you know, standards and all this other stuff right. for NG and everything. So what was there a moment? Was there a phone call or something that really, you know, switched it for you?
Well, you know, my first call, and I think we've talked about my first call was very traumatic. You know, a guy commits suicide in front of his wife and kids, and it's, you know, that was weird, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, and I think we've talked about this before too, is that I couldn't even remember what that call was until about 3-4 years ago, because mm-hmm. I had blocked it up and walled it and bricked it around it and didn't right. want to talk about it again.
Yes.
But, you know, I think there was early on, I found that it was a passion of mine. I found it to be exciting. Mm-hmm. And I quickly realized that if I really wanted to be good at it, I needed to know more about it. And I needed to learn about it. And that's when I joined NENA and joined Indiana NENA. And I went to my first conference, state conference. And I got involved and I got people who like, hey, come help us with this. And, you know, in a year I was working on legislation for the wireless 911 legislation in Indiana. Wow. Some of the early legislation in the country. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did all of this happen? And then, but it's my personality, right? I have I've been a long time student of leadership and management. That dates back to when I was a teenager. I'm a little odd.
Little?
Well. But as most people who know me would agree with that. But, you know, for me, I wanted to see the improvement. And the only way I knew I was going to be able to get the improvement was to be like, okay, we're going to do this.
Right.
And I was lucky because I had a great sheriff, Nick Gulling, who was supportive. And then when he was, not the sheriff, he was in charge of dispatch in the jail. And he was, he was incredibly supportive. I said, I want to go to a class. I want to go to Coshocton, Ohio. And I want to take this new management class that NENA's putting out. And he's like, you know, that sounds kind of interesting. I'll go with you. And we went to Coshocton, Ohio, and sat around for 3 days and learned a lot from Eric Perry. And you know, the rest is all history. And it was those types of things that allowed me to get to where I am today. But I had supportive staff, supportive managers and directors. And at the time, it wasn't director. It was jail commander who was in charge of dispatch.
Nice. See, that's always a good thing too, is to have your higher ups be supportive like that, because
right.
I mean, that, at least for me, you know, I had people that, you know, that supported me, and it really inspired me and pushed me to do more.
Sure.
And absolutely. It ended up being really good.
Yeah.
So this week, the both of you you're here at the conference, and you gave a class. And this class is on tactical dispatching. So tell me a little bit about this class, because as I said earlier today, there was we had somebody that was on a while back, and he could only say so much about tactical dispatching. But if you can, I guess, for those who are listening that might not know what tactical dispatching even is,
sure.
If you could explain that and then talk about the class.
Well, we call it tactical dispatch. It goes by many different names. Federal government has now labeled it IDT, an incident dispatch team, same thing. And for our purposes, it's a group of specially trained dispatchers that go into the field to handle an incident.
Large scale.
Large.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It can
so like grow, a yeah. Sandy Hook type thing.
Right? Well, it doesn't have to be that big. Right. Like I said, I helped develop the team in Nashville, and we use our team on trivial, everyday type of events, like every single Titans game. Titans game is a big event in Nashville and downtown Nashville. It's not a big, you know, catastrophe or anything, but lots of people on scene, which increases the police presence and also increases the fire and EMS presence. I'll have it on standby kind of thing. So whenever you have a lot more police or fire on the scene, you kind of need a dispatcher to wrangle them up.
Right.
So we do parades, we do marathons, we do, you know, the pre-planned events as well as the big scale disasters, whether man-made, natural, whatever, Mother Nature.
So do you have like a vehicle that's out there that they're just kind of set up shop and they're, you know, running different, you know,
if you're
areas?
Lucky, or, yes.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
You don't always have a vehicle available to you. You do with what you can with what you have. But most agencies, at least the police departments and the fire departments, have some type of big command vehicle. The PSAP itself, it'd be nice if we had our own personal vehicle, but you don't have to. You can work out of the police and the fire, whoever you're supporting, whoever the incident commander is, you're there to support them. And if they allow you, you know, get your foot in the door. We started with training. We actually went to some SWAT training with the SWAT commanders and said, and we asked, can we just observe? Can we see? And we volunteered to be victims and, you know, that kind of thing. And then we watched them in practice, in training of what they do. And they always had somebody in the vehicle that was usually either the rookie or the one that was in trouble that had to sit and scribe. And that person was not trained to scribe. They wanted to be out in the field kicking in doors or sniping or whatever they do. And we observed their handwritten chicken scratch notes and missing every other transmission. And, you know, they just weren't trained to do that type of work. And we went to the SWAT commanders after the fact, after the after action, pulled them aside and said, hey, we noticed you got a guy in there taking notes. Would this kind of thing be beneficial to you? And we had our notes. We had our very detailed.
Showed him what was up.
Yeah, who did what at what time, who asked for what time it was delivered, you know.
Right.
And they were amazed. Holy, I didn't know we could do this. Can you do this again? You know, can you come out? So we got our foot in the door with training. But however you can get invited to the table, as long as you're a part of that planning and training, you know, you can be very beneficial to them in the field.
That's
and
awesome.
The huge benefit of that is it takes that incident off of the day-to-day in your comm center. So you can deal that the comm center can deal with the, you know, grandma's having a heart attack, the barking dog down the street, the domestics, whatnot, and that incident, that the overwhelming majority of that incident is handled by people on the scene.
Wow.
Right.
So then
and similar for me, like, so I was telling you too that like I developed the dispatch team for Hancock County where I was a lowly telecommunicator.
Out of Indiana.
In Indiana, yeah. And I, you know, again, it was, I went to the sheriff and said, I think we should do this, right? And he's like, not sure.
Really. Of course, yeah.
and it in a similar situation, like I went and I became the victim for a SWAT training one day. That all worked out great until they did the flashbang, and then I had an asthma attack, and they had to take me away to the hospital.
Now, are you serious?
They did have to call the ambulance.
Oh man,
the smoke really choked me up, and I couldn't. It was hard.
But so then after that, they probably felt bad. They're like, "We're going to do this because he just almost died.
He almost died. So I guess we should agree.
Surely never going to invite him back to be a victim.
No, hell
no. Right. Yeah. But he's a real victim.
Yeah, no kidding. But I, you know, there was one of the hostage negotiators. He recognized that, like, okay, we need that detailed scribe. We need somebody. You know, we're focused on negotiating. We're focused on the tactical side of things.
Right.
We need somebody who's paying attention to what's actually happening, whether it's with the negotiators or with the team, the SWAT team, and say, you know, record that for legal purposes, like, because no one was doing it, right? And either no one was doing it or when they were doing it, it was sucky.
Right.
Because they didn't know what they were doing.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
And so, you know, it was under his impotence that, like, pushing the sheriff to go, look, this is what we need this. It's going to help us in the long run.
Right.
And, you know, for us, we started out doing it for SWAT incidents. And then all of a sudden the dive team goes, well, we need somebody to, like, mind and write down how long people are in the water and how much air they have. And so we need a scribe too. So then we began going out on all dive incidents.
Cool.
And then I was a good fire dispatcher. Mm-hmm. And I was a firefighter volunteer. And so a lot of people said, you know, well, you know, if we had a big fire, could you bring that out? And could you do that for a big fire? And I was like, well, sure. I mean, it's all the same principles. It's
right.
Not like it's rocket surgery or something. So we actually had one, a big, giant fire. It was funny because I was living in an apartment, in a basement apartment, about three blocks from the fire, right? And I was on Midnights at the time, and this box warehouse caught on fire. Box manufacturing company. This box manufacturing company had been there for, I don't know, 100 years. Is a wood building where glue and, like, adhesive had been used for 100 years.
We call that kindling.
Yeah, pretty much. And I woke up, or I got the call, I got the page.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. We started with pages too.
Yes,
pages. And I called in, and they're like, hey, there's a fire, and they want you to go out.
What's your team?
Well, the team was me.
Oh.
At that point, we were really early, and we were beginning to get more people.
Oh, okay,
but at the time, it was effectively me and, like, one other person. But that person, I think, was working. Like, so they couldn't come out
because
we only had two dispatchers, right? I mean, I was a small agency. So so I go into the sheriff's department, get the truck, go over. And yeah, it was a 7-alarm fire. We had fire departments from 3 or 4 counties surrounding us. And
it's all you.
And it was me and the incident commander. And that was it. And I was like, you need to do this. And do you realize this is what's happening here? And he's like, I don't know what I would have done if you weren't here, right, to help us with that. And it was a very cool event. I actually got an award for that.
Well,
from
done,
the state.
Man.
I didn't know anything about it. One day, my supervisor said, "You've got to be at this event, and your mom should go too."
Right. Like, it's like, okay, scouts. Your parents are there, and you got to put the pin on them.
I'm like, why? And he's like, well, you should just go. Like, okay, so I go and. Like, I think completely blew me away. I didn't know anything about it.
Did you cry?
No.
Come on.
His mom did. What he's describing is what we have advanced to, and that was a long time ago, so kudos to you. We are more than
1800.
It's more than just scribing now, because the tactical dispatcher has really become the right hand of command. Mm-hmm. And we have to often have a better grasp of the ICS&M structure, because there's fewer of us. We go on more events than the actual incident commanders do, because any given day of time, you're going to have a different incident commander, but you're always on the scene of something. Your team is.
Right.
So we are exposed to the incident command structure a whole lot more often, and we have to nudge them along. We have to say, hey, we need a safety officer. You got to appoint somebody. Hey, you need to be thinking about this, or you need to be thinking about that. We're staying one step ahead of them because dispatchers, by nature, see the big picture.
Right.
We don't get tunnel vision on one particular aspect of it.
Exactly.
We are big picture.
And set so, that whole description of, you know, a telecommunicator has to be a subject matter expert on every facet of public safety dispatch.
Absolutely. Like,
so you have to be a subject matter expert in police and fire and EMS and emergency management and everything else, right? So it helps if especially those who have that broad base of understanding, they make the best tactical dispatchers because they're thinking. They're those people that are always like one step ahead in dispatch.
Right. Yeah.
Right? They're always thinking about that next thing. And
it's
those
like
make
chess.
Great.
Exactly.
Exactly. They make great tactical dispatchers or incident dispatchers.
So then you've got all of this experience between the both of you, and you've got this session. Like we said, you already gave this session. But for those who have not been able to experience the session, walk me through really quick what it is. I'm walking into the room and I sit down, and do you guys talk more about examples of incidents that you've dealt with, or they're, you know, kind of a video or something?
Well,
or
it's set up as an 8-hour course. Mm-hmm. It's not a full day course, and there's a lot of class participation, but we really take a pulse of the students that we're dealing with, because if it's all brand new people that have never experienced tactical dispatch, then it's going to be more of us informing you of how to set up a team, what you're looking for in good team members,
gotcha,
how to go through
okay.
the process. Once you do establish a team, what are you going to have them do in the field? We break down, we get into specifics about ICS forms and how to properly use them.
What kind of equipment you need?
Yeah. We give
like
you the
even personal equipment, like
those
types.
Bag,
of,
yeah.
Your go bag, you know, to that degree.
Wow. Now, this week, we had a good mix of people in the class we had some new people that were just trying to start a team, but we had a lot of people that already had experienced teams in place. So we drew on their experience as well,
yeah,
and they
that's
were able
good,
to,
yeah.
They were able to add to the class. And so we try very hard to make sure that everyone's needs are met in this class. Whatever you're coming to class expecting to hear, you know, to get, we try to make sure we give it to you. So it just depends on what the makeup of the class is as to how we focus the class. But we do have a lot of information to share on how to establish the team, what you're looking for in team members, what kind of equipment you need, what kind of responsibilities you have in the field. And we give real-life examples of, in Nashville, we do it this way. In Chicago, we do it this way. Indiana does it that way. And everybody
California
has to, yeah, you have to customize your team based on your responders' needs. But you're there as support for the responders in the overall event.
And I think it also has to, is really important about what it is you're trying to support.
Absolutely.
Because SWAT has a different set of needs than the dive team, and
right,
fire
yeah.
has a different set of needs than the SWAT team has. So, you know, the greatest part about it is, you know, when I did that at the county, and then I translated that, moving that idea when I was the director at the airport. And, you know, as Lisa talked about planned events, we implemented that same thing at the airport when we did planned events, you know, when the president came, when the vice president came, you know, every time we had a big, large, special event or some dignitary that was, we opened up the command center and there was always a dispatcher there who was the person in charge of that incident.
Running the show.
We do the same thing.
Really
in Nashville.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It really, that person is not the incident commander, but in the structure we ended up with at the airport while I was there, I don't know if it's still that way today, but while I was there, it really was the point of that dispatch person who is that incident dispatcher has as much authority as the incident commander.
As they should.
Because, and just as everything, like, just as in dispatch,
right?
You know, the dispatcher in a lot of agencies has command authority. You can make the decisions to do whatever needs to be done because you see the bigger picture, as you said.
Man.
We talk about in class how in the formal ICS structure, the NIM structure, you know, you're supposed to have an operations section chief, a planning section chief, a logistics. Nobody does that. In real life, that is very rarely ever spelled out.
Yeah, unless it's a massive federal response.
But we find that the incident dispatcher feels the liaison role, feels the public information officer role sometimes, feels the staging role, because all the units coming in are checking in with dispatch. I mean, we're filling all those different roles. So, yeah, we're the right hand of command, I say.
It sounds like an intense class, man.
It's awesome. A neat class.
But a very interesting one, because, I mean, I've always been interested in stuff like that, too. So those who are listening, make sure to check out this class. Are you guys doing this where, you know, PSAPs are hosting it, or are you doing this at different conferences? Or
how are you both? Yes and yes.
Awesome.
So if a chapter wants to host it, or an agency wants to host it, or if a state is trying to stand up maybe a TERT team, you know, because TERT plays into this.
Right.
And the TERT deployment, because it's the skills that are utilized on a TERT deployment, are the skills that are manifested in an incident dispatch.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they work hand in hand. And so it's important for, you know, I think obviously the TERT training is incredibly important, and you have to have that to be able to be deployed and things like that. But I think there's those next set of skills that you can learn from our class.
I have a particular set of skills.
Yeah.
I need to learn that whole dialogue. Yes. But yes, you're absolutely right. And we don't live in a perfect world, and nothing ever plays out like you plan it to. And you could be, it happened to me, our very first TERT request, we sent a TERT team, and it turned into an incident dispatch, a tactical dispatch situation, because we went for the purpose of relieving the dispatch centers, their personnel. Well, it was a crisis, and they didn't want to leave. You know how dispatchers are.
Right.
They buckle down. You know, this is my radio. I'm going to take care of business.
Yeah,
leave me alone.
I'm going to do it no matter what.
So they didn't need us, and so we were going to turn around and leave, and the incident commander said, wait, we could use some help in the EOC. Can we set up a phone bank, and can you help that? And it quickly turned into a different situation, but our guys are versatile and trained in to expect anything, and you know, you adapt and overcome, and we sat down and did what we needed to do.
Right.
Awesome. Well, going into the wrap up of this episode, if you could, you know, just quickly say, you know, kind of what Nina's got new coming up. We've got San Antonio coming up here pretty soon.
It's gonna
and
be
then
awesome.
Any social media links that you want to plug, have at it. which I think actually, if you just go to Facebook, I know that Twitter, if you want to follow them on Twitter, it's at 911NINA911.
And that is the same for Facebook.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, they are the same.
Oh, no shit. I didn't know that.
It's crazy, but after you said it, then it makes all sense to me. our social media at 911NINA911. And yes, we do have some great stuff coming up. Obviously, the annual conference is coming up in San Antonio in June. We have tons of pre-conference courses. Obviously, the CMCP 5 days manager's course starting 6 days before
Tuesday.
That's right.
I'm spending the entire month of June in Texas. No. I fly in on the 29th. I think I'm flying out on the 11th of June. 29th of May, 11th of June.
He's going to be an honorary Texan.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Get me a big hat.
We're also doing the 3-day supervisor course as a pre-con for the conference.
And the 3-day center training officer program.
Yeah.
And then we have a number of single-day sessions before the actual conference begins. Conference registration is good, and hotels are going fast. So if you haven't booked your hotel, make sure you get that done relatively soon. And we actually are going to have a couple free workshops on Thursday after the conference. One is called It's a New Class in Development. It's going to be beta tested for free on that Thursday. It's called Bring Your A Game to Fire an EMS Dispatch.
Very nice.
it's being developed by some folks in the Chicagoland area from a fire and EMS only dispatch center. And Chris Carver, who is a NINA, one of our colleagues at NINA, who is the former director of FDNY, Emergency Communications. And so they're building a great class, and we've started to see some of the materials that they're putting together. It's going to be great.
Yeah,
it really sounds like it.
Interesting, you know, kind of that advanced beyond the call stuff that you need to be thinking about. All of those things that we were just talking about,
right,
being that next step ahead, right?
How can people register for that?
Go to the conference and then show up on Thursday.
There you go. For those listening,
free.
Go to the conference and you will be able to take part in this
for free.
Free beta test class.
Yeah.
That's going to be really cool.
It's going to be a good one. And then we have another free class on Thursday that is, telecommunicator tunnel vision. How to prevent telecommunicator tunnel vision.
Really?
Yeah. Brian Tegmeyer is working that with John Kelly and some other folks to try and, you know, when the CAD doesn't work, when the CAD goes down, what do we do? Like, when the phone doesn't ring, what do we do?
Right.
When you get so focused on one aspect that you begin to lose focus on the bigger picture, you know, how to bring yourself out of that. How do you get out of that and not fall into those typical things where we sometimes do. Not because we, you know, are not trained properly or whatever, but because it's just human nature. We sometimes get focused too far on specifics and we forget about the bigger picture. So how do you keep yourself out of those tunnel vision moments? So that's another great one. And that's
are they both at the same time?
They are.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
That's, oh, man. How dare you?
Well, and then we also have the ENP boot camp going on at the same time. So those of you who are wanting to do the ENP, the boot camp's going on that same day at the same time. So
sweet.
Lots going on.
Yeah, you guys have a lot of things going on. That's going to be good.
And we've got two education summits coming up.
That's right.
One in September in Indiana. Is that right?
In October is in Indiana.
Yeah, September in Oregon City, Oregon.
Okay, yep.
It's the education summit, 3 days, four different classes. You can take the 3-day supervisor class, and then you can take one of the 3 single day classes. $100 for the single day classes, $300 for the supervisor class. Deeply discounted. Great opportunity to get a lot of training in a short amount of time. And then our partners here at InDigital have helped us out with the sponsorship the Education Summit at the University of Notre Dame in October, which is going to be very cool to have 911 dispatch classes being taught on the campus there at Notre Dame. And we're excited about that, and we're excited about our partnership with InDigital for that.
And but so are we.
Before all that, we have a summit in Arkansas in May.
Yeah.
That's round the corner.
Round the corner, just a couple weeks away in
August. Holy cow, yeah, that's right. This is all coming up really fast.
Education summits, three education summits in the year. Oh, my God, what am I thinking?
Good luck.
It's great stuff.
Well, thank you both for being on the podcast. It's been a lot of fun. And those who are listening, make sure to go and check out all this information. I mean, NENA.org. Just go there.
Yep.
NENA.org. You get all that information there. Find them on Facebook, on Twitter. And
sorry, this was not nearly as fun and exciting.
What?
As our normal ones.
Wow.
No, but I will tell you that.
Thanks.
Are you serious? Well, I had fun.
Well, you know, we were not like chuckles like we sometimes get.
Some of those have been very, very chuckly, where I almost thought that I would get you guys in trouble.
Well.
Because I wouldn't get in trouble for it.
I was thinking that I was going to get in trouble. True Grit is the movie that I was trying to think of earlier.
Oh, my gosh. Half an hour later.
Oh, I am so glad that you, because I was kind of thinking in my head, I wonder if you ever found, because I saw you put your phone down.
Yep.
Did you IMDb it?
I just went to, I Wikipedia'd John Wayne. I can't believe I had to look it up. Okay. As big of a John Wayne fan as I am.
That's funny.
Yes, I have not seen the new one. I refuse to see the new one. John Wayne did it best. I don't care about anybody else. So,
oh my gosh.
And the Wayback Machine just go right on ahead.
I cannot believe that you.
It just came to
you. You held it all the way.
I didn't want to disrupt.
Oh my gosh.
Conscientious.
That is awesome.
Well, okay, and the funny 911 call you asked me about, I didn't tell you, but I will.
Yes.
So guy calls 911. This is a true story. Guy calls 911 and asks the 911 operator, hey, do you have a drug sniffing canine? This is not a normal question 911 gets. So they took the bait and said, yes, what is the problem? Where is your emergency? And he said, I bought my girlfriend a bag of weed for her birthday and I hid it and I don't remember where it is. Can y'all come help me find it? And my 911 call taker said, absolutely, we'll be right there.
Now, who got, did they both get arrested or just him?
The girlfriend went there. Yeah. He got arrested. He got arrested. He missed her birthday. Yeah, it was an ugly scene.
Oh my gosh. Well, what a fool. I mean, was he toasted when he called?
Obviously.
I mean,
come on.
He would have had to have been, right? To think calling.
I thought it was kind of smart of him to think outside the box. I mean, how else are you going to find it if you hit it and you don't know where it is, you know? I mean,
I guess that's true. Yeah, but
I don't know. You might clean up the freaking house.
Actually, we've had a lot of calls of people. This is true. We've had a lot of calls where people will call in to complain on their drug dealer for selling them fake stuff.
What?
Yes.
Okay, well, they're not real smart in Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's a Tennessee thing. I think that's a big city thing. If you go across the country, you'll find that there's a lot of those calls.
She's going to throw something at you. Yeah.
Well, I can't say anything bad because Tennessee has been great to us. And I, as my wife says, it's my second home. So
it is.
Well,
yeah, he's going to start paying taxes.
Well, they don't have taxes.
That's true. No taxes in Tennessee. Come to Tennessee.
Oh, man. I might. All right. Awesome. I remember that. And they've got smart people to call in wanting canine dogs to find their stash.
It's always interesting. For years I said I was going to write a book, and then of course somebody did, and you know he's probably a millionaire now, and here I sit on all these great stories.
No, he's probably not.
Okay,
it's like 100 dispatchers that bought the book, so you know it's 100 dispatchers at $10 a piece, so you get maybe $1,000. Your time is not nearly that. I mean.
I think we could write a funny book.
It would have been awesome if your officer that went out there would have brought some like Funyuns or Munchos or something. You know, give him some snacks. Hey, by the way, we're taking you in.
That's me.
So for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us on swttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @911podcast. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And this episode and all the others recorded this week live from the Navigator Conference are supported by the IAED. And as always, the podcast is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. You can also listen to this episode 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.